from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, first, a new play in San Francisco that looks at the musical genius of legendary jazz trumpeter Chet Baker. We talk to the local actor and playwright who are bringing his sound to the stage. Then at 10:30, Breitbart journalist Milo Yiannopoulos has been banned from Twitter for racist tweets. He's slated to speak at UC Berkeley, but some students and faculty are trying to stop the talk because of his notoriously offensive rhetoric. We'll discuss the controversy heating up on campus. Join us for Forum. It's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Well, that's Happy Little Sunbeam, a Chet Baker song, and jazz aficionados might recognize that trumpet as the trademark sound of Chet Baker, a jazz legend in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, who is once described as James Dean and Sinatra and Bix rolled into one. How many of you remember Bix? The man from Oklahoma who dropped out of school and joined the Army, and was stationed out here, made a name for himself playing with the likes of Jerry Mulligan and Russ Freeman. He also played in the Army band at the Presidio and at San Francisco jazz nightclubs like Bop City and the Black Hawk before he slipped into heroin addiction. His story has come back to life with a new play called The Cool, which plays at Amato's in San Francisco in early February. And joining us now are playwright Barry Eitel and Philip Watt, the actor who plays Chet Baker. And welcome to both of you. Good to have you both here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you both. Philip, maybe you can tell us, tell those who aren't familiar with jazz and the world of Chet Baker, which was the world of jazz, what is cool about, what is Chet Baker's life as we see it in this play?
In this play, you see the birth of the West Coast Cool, which is a different style of jazz. Basically, Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker had a pianoless quartet, which had not really happened before. And at the Hague Club, which is a legendary club, they had a residency for about 11 months. And during that time, they were able to, with the different running patterns and counter melodies with just two horns, a bass, and drums, they were able to come into a new type of sound. And everyone knows the birth of the cool with Miles Davis. There was some, you could say competitive, to say the least, energy between the two.
In fact, you mentioned Miles Davis. Your play takes place in 1954, the year the Cleveland Indians went to the World Series. Sorry, Cleveland boy has to think of that. But also in 1953 and 54, Miles Davis was beaten out, along with Clifford Brown, by Downbeat Magazine, by Chet Baker as the best trumpeter.
That's true.
I mean, this is you're really trying to compress a lot of history here about, new sound, the cool sound, and also who Chet Baker was. And you're playing him, Philip, and it's a tough role to play because he was an extraordinary man, but he was also a man who had a lot of demons.
It's true, but this time around, because we've done several versions of it, this time around he's 25, and he hasn't gotten into the heroin. There's a little bit more of that, as they say in the play, red-faced schoolboy kind of feeling.
He's still somewhat of an innocent, huh?
Yeah. He hasn't dabbled with the horse, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what they used to call heroin, and we've got a lot in this play about homophobia, about drug abuse, obviously, about police brutality, it's very current in a lot of those ways. What led you to write it?
I didn't write it. I turned to one of the best writers, up-and-coming writers in the Bay Area named Barry Eitel, who's sitting right to my right here.
Well, I'm going to ask Barry Eitel, and that was really where the question was meant to be.
Well, I was interested in exploring the world that gave birth to the West Coast cool jazz movement. So That's why I brought in all these different topics of police brutality. There's some cultural appropriation issues, too, that you could say why Chet Baker probably became as popular as he did among, you know, teenage girls.
He was a damn good looking guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, he was a safe white trumpet player, too. In its own way, this is our birth of the cool.
You've given birth of the cool again, a rebirth of the cool,
yeah.
And you're doing it over in what's come to be known as the Mercantile Corner here in San Francisco. You've got all these things happening in Valencia. Talk a little bit about the venue, though, because this is a former underground performance space.
Yes, I'll jump in there. We took a previous play there, Chetty's Lullaby. We were there for 12 performances in 2013. The venue is pretty extraordinary. It's a highly sought-after venue for musicians. It's literally underground in the sense of, in the past, you couldn't do press releases. You had to sort of wink and nod as far as the fire department, and you had to go in, sign a paper book, and then you get the calendar emailed to you, and then you could go into it. But that era is over, and now it's called Amato's, which is... The best way to remember it for me is I feel like Luigi, Mario, and then they got a cousin named Amado. I don't know if they're doing the pizza or whatever, but it's that Italian name. It's named after a very beloved bartender in that area. And it's funny, the venue itself, it's wonderful down there. It used to have a feeling of a grandfather clock with a lot of dust in it where they stick the old parts in it, the pendulums and everything. It seems crowded, but it's excellent. But now it's like a restored grandfather clock with no dust and lots of extra space. And it's just even more fantastic than it was a couple years back.
Well, we call that the Mercantile Corner, of course, because of the Marsh and Elbow Room and all of those places
right.
That are there. I thought we'd hear some more Chet Baker, though. And he is remembered certainly fondly by people of his time. I would suggest some of you who don't remember him, some of our younger listeners, may indeed want to avail yourself not only of this play, which has a good deal of music in it, but also do what I did last night. Go on YouTube and hear Chet Baker. I mean, he had a very dulcet and fine voice, as well as being one of the great trumpeters. And his signature song, which I really fancy, I must say, is My Funny Valentine. Let's hear some.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art.
Barry, when did he start singing? It's around the time your place begins, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably the big inciting or explosive incident that we capture in the play is the night that he decides to start singing, because he was singing for a long time, you know, in the car around other jazz musicians, and they would just make fun of him because he has this really reedy voice. And then
it's a terrific voice, though.
Well, it's terrific, yeah, but they did not. It wasn't a traditional jazz.
It wasn't an instrument voice yet.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we have him finally get the confidence to try singing, and the rest is history.
Also, since we're talking about a little bit about history, in 1952, he actually was invited up to play with the Bird, Charlie Parker. I mean, this was also, you know, a major moment in his life.
Yeah, we actually have, we talk about that in this play.
Mm.
And you also talk about Mulligan. I mean, Jerry Mulligan, of course, was in prison. He was playing in the quartet with Mulligan, and then Mulligan was busted for heroin.
Which Chet Baker sort of had a role to play in that, in telling the police that where he was.
Yeah, a little bit of the...
A little snitch?
Yeah.
He wasn't too opposed to, you know, taking care of number one.
A nice euphemistic way of putting it. In fact, you look at his history and it's tragic because he got so into heroin. He started, I think, in 1957, and then it just went downhill. And there was a beating in Sausalito. He got his teeth knocked out. He couldn't even play the trumpet anymore. I mean, it's quite a story.
Yeah.
In the 70s, in Sausalito.
At the Trident Club.
Yeah, and he spent months trying to bring back his embouchure.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe give us the voice, Philip, that you've developed? You've got about 15 seconds of Chet Baker. You can, not singing, but...
Yeah, this is, I'll do the short little clip. This is from the play that we're doing. This is his story about Charlie Parker, which he changed over time. But this is the one that's only 2 years old. So he says, I played with Bird in 52 at the Trade Winds. He sought me out, sent me a letter. I had barely played anywhere, but he said I was one of the greatest trumpet players he's ever played with. He called Miles and told him to watch out. There's a little white cat on the coast who's going to eat you up.
I want to open the phone lines. I want to ask people who are listening questions you may have about Chet Baker's life or music, or if you're a fan of his music, and particularly if you're a fan of his music, what makes it special? We'll hear some more, of course, but let me indeed invite you to join this conversation. And memory doesn't have to necessarily be the hallmark here, but by all means, we want to hear people who have memories, because he was here in the Bay Area and San Francisco, and in fact, wound up living in Milpitas for quite a while. Just those one of kind of interesting facts. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. We do invite your calls, so feel free to do that right now. 866-733-6786. If you have a question or comment about Chet Baker or about the cool jazz scene as it began and as it was inaugurated, you can also let us know your thoughts or let us know about any questions you might have about Chet Baker by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and just click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And let's set this up. We're going to hear a little bit of Russ Job. Want to tell us, Barry, about this?
This was written by Russ Freeman, who is modest, as you can tell. He was one of the early collaborators with Chet Baker. Chet Baker played many of his songs when he did his first tour around the U.S.,
I have a little more intel on Russ Freeman, too, to just throw in. Russ lived in the Hollywood Hills. Chet was down in the South Bay cities. But about...
He was actually in San Jose, in fact, wasn't he?
Well, at this time, he was living in L.A., and he was down by the beach. But he would go to Russ's house in the Hollywood Hills, and for about 6 months, he'd stay there at least two nights a week. Just stay there, they'd play all day. And one of the things that happened was that he would watch Russ's hands as he was composing and as he was playing. And I think that's partially what allowed Chet to break into such a vibrant and accurate ability to play this bop harmony. Because he wasn't really much of a reader. He could barely read music. He didn't really go along with that. He just went, and I feel like with looking over Russ's hands and getting that visual component, I think that he had a harmonic breakthrough.
Astonishes me, by the way, how many musicians don't know how to read music. Here's Russ Job.
Yeah.
So, Philip, what drew you to this? I mean, especially to playing Chet Baker.
Well, I've been a trumpet player since kindergarten. I became an actor at 15. When I was 31, I started to do biographical pieces. I did a Dylan Thomas one-man show. Basically, I adapted it, and that went into a tour. That's when I met Irene Noguchi. And when I was at a wedding, I met a man who was a poet. He started to recite Dylan Thomas to me. And at the end of that wedding, we had had enough conversations where he said, I'm going to write you a play about Chet Baker. And that was Stephen Delbos. And that was 2010. The play went up in 2013-14.
So in addition to Portrait of the Artist as a Young Dog, Dylan Thomas is probably best known for Do Not Go Gently Into That Good Night, one of the greatest poems, in my judgment, in the English language, but a poem that, try writing a villanelle sometime, by the way. Even I'm talking even to those of you who may be poets or fledgling poets especially. Barry, let's talk with you about Made in Mexico, because you like it.
Yeah, it's another Russ Freeman tune. I like it. It's percussive. There's a flamenco flair to it, which it's very different than a lot of the tunes you heard that he played on that first national tour in 1954. A lot of the tunes that we used in the play come from his album Live at Ann Arbor to really capture that early Chet Baker sound.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Made in Mexico. M-A-I-D.
Right.
Boy, I'd love to hear from some of you young millennial listeners who are hearing Chet Baker for the first time, especially some of you who have, like me, picked up a trumpet and tried to play it. My trumpet teacher actually, I was a boy studying the trumpet, called me Dizzy, and not because of Dizzy Gillespie, because I just couldn't do what I needed to do with the trumpet. Sort of half-assed as a trumpet player. But Made in Mexico, again, is M-A-I-D. Let's talk, Barry, with you a little bit about, and again, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org. Can you talk a bit about these, San Francisco jazz clubs that were so much associated with this particular time and this artist? I mean, Bop City and the Black Hawk, so.
I mean, it really gave birth to this West Coast cool sound. It's interesting how it's so different than the New York sound at the time, which was very angry, very aggressive comparatively. But L.A. was a real home for the sound at the time, too.
And Chet Baker also had a good deal of association and actually performing with Stan Getz, didn't he?
Yeah, also in L.A.
Yeah.
That he was part of the quartet with Jerry Mulligan,
yeah.
Correct?
Not
yeah.
Stan, but Stan and he, you know, played all the way into the end of Chet's career. But they were quite standoffish, totally different personalities. They wouldn't, you know, chat it up that much backstage.
Did he know Brubeck? Did he play with Brubeck at all?
He mentions him in an interview as one of his influences, and I don't know the story of them collaborating, but I do remember that he mentioned him along with some other musicians.
I want to read an important question. This, I think, is from one of our listeners. For someone wanting to be introduced to Chet Baker's music, what album should I start with? What should I listen for?
Well, for right now, if you want to come see the play, I would say look up the Ann Arbor 1954 live recording. It's a lot of the Russ Freeman is happening, and it's just incendiary. It's so fast. It's so amazing. And it's a college performance.
And it's online.
Yeah, it's 54 at Ann Arbor, and I think at least three of the tunes we're going to be playing in the cool. You'll hear those there.
And again, let me give a plug for the cool, because it's going to be playing if I get the right focus sheet out here. Too many papers sometimes. Actually, I could go to one of you probably and
give
this, but it's
sure.
Running February 10th, 11th, 17th, 18th, 24th, and 25th at Amato's on Valencia Street in the space formerly occupied by Viracocha. And we're going to go to some calls here. Let me go to Jordan first. Jordan, you're on.
I'm just calling in I am a millennial from the Bay Area, California, and I first heard my son Valentine on Valentine's Day in math class, and it changed my life. I really love that song, and I've, you know, performed it at, like, various auditions, and it's just every single time it just makes me feel really good, and so I just wanted to thank my high school math teacher, Kevin, for putting that in my ear, and thank you guys for doing the special on him and for doing this play. I hope to go and see it soon.
Well, thank you, Jordan, and it's good to hear from you. I should give Barry Eitel some of a prop here because, again, he's the playwright who has brought the cool to life here about Chet Baker, brought Chet Baker back to life, and he's also original head writer for Boxcar Theater's The Speakeasy, and I want to get another caller on, and that's you, Tim. Welcome.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment, you know, I'm a record collector, and pretty much every time I find a copy of Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker's My Funny Valentine, every time I find the 78, it's a well-cared-for record, but the grooves are stripped because it's been listened to so many times. You know, just a well-loved record by everybody who seems to have ever come across it. Certainly every time I hear it, it's, you know, it's practically a religious experience for me. I'm a millennial, younger guy at only 30 years old, but the music, it touches me deeply.
Well, it's a great song in many ways, but it's also a song that has his stamp on it, you know, that has his pretty much rendering of it, and I'm glad that somebody 30 years old is enjoying that music, and I thank you for the call. Let me bring another caller in here, and that's you, Clyde. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I, in a documentary and among other rumors in the jazz field, I heard that Chet didn't practice. And if you listen to him play, there's no way as a trumpet player you can not practice and play as well as he did. And so I just wanted to see if anyone else had a good comment on that.
You know about Chet Baker player. Practicing or not practicing?
I can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. He was in the Army. He lived here at the Presidio for a while. And what he would do is he would, you know, go to the Reveille and do his musical duties in the morning, take a big nap because he had privileges, and then he would leave AWOL, I guess they call it, and he'd go into North Beach. I think Clint Eastwood saw him during that period when Clint was young. And he did practice, but he really just played all the time. I think the quote that you're getting that from is from Let's Get Lost. The trumpet player who said that is a little jealous. He did have natural abilities, but he practiced.
Of course he practiced. And thank you, Philip Watt. Thank you, Barry Eitel. And again, The Cool runs February 10, 11, 17, 18, 24th, and 25th at Amato's. That's on Valencia Street. We're going to talk about big controversy that's brewing over an appearance coming up at UC Berkeley when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.